Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, finn@offbeatoregon.com. And this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy this show. Robert Fance had come to the Illinois River prepared to die. Which he did, but not quite the way he thought he might. This Offbeat Oregon History article was first published on May 9th of 2011, under the headline, Hermit of the Craggies Went from Acorns and Roots to Prison Food. Robert Fance had a degenerative lung disease, probably tuberculosis. So in the early 1930s, he and his wife bought a meadowland farm deep in the heart of what today is the Rogue River Wilderness area from the man who had homesteaded it several years before. And they settled in, hoping that the clean Southwest Oregon air would help Robert beat the illness. The Fance's new home, known still today as the Fance Ranch, was very remote. The nearest community was Agnes, an unincorporated jumping-off place that had sprung up to mark the end of the Rogue River mailboat line with a population of just a few dozen. The nearest neighbor, an old trapper who lived right across the river, was not entirely sane. Really, it wasn't old Hugo Meyer's fault that he was nuts. In the early 1920s, the government had started building a bridge across the Rogue River in Agnes, where the Illinois River runs into the Rogue. Meyer was working on the bridge one day when another worker dropped a wrench and it hit Meyer on the head, doing enough damage to require that his skull be reinforced with a steel plate. After that, he was never quite the same. Hugo Meyer was born in Germany in 1884 and came to America when he was 20 years old. Within a couple of years of his arrival, he was on the West Coast and prospecting for gold. With a partner, he delved deep into the wildest and most remote part of Oregon, the mountains along the Rogue River known as the Craggies, in search of color. In 1906, he decided to settle down on a homestead, so he emerged from the wilderness and spent a summer working in Crescent City, California, putting together enough money for the filing fee, and then plunged back into the Craggies and set up housekeeping beside the Illinois River. There, a prospector had already built and abandoned a little shack. He moved into it and cleared a little garden next to the shack. And there he lived for 27 years. Meyer was a sharp fellow. He invented a technique for crossing the river that was a bit like a cross between a zip line and a pogo stick. Here's how it worked. He secured a cable across the river, good and tight, secured to something very solid. Then he took a beefy plank and cut a channel in one end so that it would hook over the cable, and then he secured a cross piece through the bottom. Standing on the cross piece and holding the plank near the top, he would throw his weight forward. Well, sideways, really, but forward in a sense of forward across the river, bouncing on the cable and essentially hopping across the river. He'd go into town about once a year, usually trekking down the river to Gold Beach. He'd buy flour and coffee. For everything else, he was utterly self-reliant. To raise money, he trapped and shot animals. Bear, wildcat, cougar, fox, whatever else might make him some money. His yearly income was in the $50 to $100 range. Of course, he ate most of the animals he shot, so his diet was pretty rich in meat. In addition, he dug camas root, ground and leached acorn flour, and grew a few vegetables. He also had a homemade pipe in which he smoked laurel tree bark. It wasn't the lap of luxury, but it was a life, and Meyer must have enjoyed it because he always came back. Then came that accident at the Agnes Bridge. It was sometime later that the Fances moved in, right across the river from him. Meyer got along great with his new neighbors, at first, but paranoid suspicions soon darkened his mind. As time went by, Meyer became increasingly convinced that Bob Fance was trying to get rid of him. He made only $27 in all of the 1933 trapping season because he was afraid to leave his shack. He'd convinced himself that Fance was planning to sneak across the river and light it on fire while he was out. Something, he told himself, something had to be done. So one November day that year, he lurked along the trail with his ratty old 22 Winchester rimfire rifle. When Fance came into view, Meyer ordered him to stop. Meyer later told authorities he'd planned to march Fance across the river, execute him, and bury his body there. But Fance wasn't cooperating. Instead, he wisely put the spurs to his horse and galloped away as fast as he could. But it wasn't fast enough, though. Meyer shot him off his horse and left him there dead. When the horse returned without him, Fance's wife came and found him where he'd fallen. Because of his lung disease, she immediately assumed that he had died of a naturally occurring lung hemorrhage. It was only after the mortician discovered the bullet hole in his back that they figured out he'd actually been murdered. Meyer, convinced his shooting offense had been just, necessary, and morally defensible, hadn't taken any great pains to cover the crime up. Investigators found shell casings at the scene, along with his homemade pipe, which he'd left in his hiding spot. But when police came to his cabin to arrest him, they found it empty. Meyer, finally rid of his dreaded enemy, was making up for lost time on his trap line. He was gone for weeks, during which time everyone in the Agnes area took to packing pistols everywhere they went in case crazy Hugo should appear. When Meyer did return to his cabin, police were waiting, and he went with them cheerfully. The newspapers, when he was brought into Grants Pass for trial, called him the Hermit of the Craggies and the Old Man of the Mountains. Even after he was tried and convicted of first-degree murder, he remained convinced that the governor, as soon as he heard his story, would pardon him. But then, if he were pardoned, he'd have to go back to his life in the woods. It wasn't entirely clear that he wanted to do that, to go back to leaching ground acorns in the river to make a few pancakes to eat with his raccoon and camas root stew, all the time thinking longingly about the delicious food they served in the Josephine County Jail. That's right, Crazy Hugo loved the jail. It was like a spa resort compared with the crude life he'd left behind in his little riverside shack. Before being shipped off to the penitentiary in Salem in early 1934, he thanked the community for giving him the best Christmas of his life. So much delicious food, such a soft and comfortable bed, such refined bathing and toilet facilities. It would be hard to go back to eating acorns and squirrels and using thimbleberry leaves for toilet paper. But of course he didn't have to. Crazy Hugo spent the rest of his life in Salem, in the state pen. He died in 1961. You can still see the remains of his shack across the river from Fance Ranch. Both are now part of the Rogue River Wilderness Area. Well, that's our show for today. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to the podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a series of live history shows, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone newsreader, a Facebook page, a couple other minor components too. Photographs and other visual goodies that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon History for fun and to learn things, so I don't jeopardize that by selling advertising or asking for donations. However, if you enjoy Offbeat Oregon History and you'd like to support it, you can always pick up a copy of my book. If you enjoy this show, I can pretty much guarantee you'll enjoy the book. It's called Wicked Portland. It was published by the History Press in 2012, and they're available at community bookstores, or you can order a signed copy from the store link at offbeatoregon.com. Sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Our next show will be coming your way around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.